Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. And I will be, well, I've got an announcement. I'm not sure when it'll be starting, but I was on Republic Broadcasting Network, I think, was it yesterday or the day before, with James Corbett of the Corbett Report. And RBN had been looking at giving me a show for some time, and had been talking in the background, apparently, with American Freedom Radio as well. So yeah, now they have offered me a slot on their network, as well as doing this show here on American Freedom Radio, which is fortuitous timing because I had just decided that I'm going to double, triple my workload and do more guests, more interviews, more hours, more this, more that, more the other. And then here it is. How about them apples? Isn't that interesting? You get your signal sent out, and other people receive it and pick it up, and get you what you need. And today, speaking of that, I had an idea once. I think it was maybe a couple of years back, of making a movie about 9/11, from the idea of the real terrorists who planned it, you know, in the White House and all of that sort of stuff, and them talking openly about it and in the planning rooms, and what happened to all the people on the planes and stuff like that. And you could basically incorporate as many of the conspiracy theories as you want in a fictional format. And through telling this through this movie, I figured, you know, you could get a lot of people to wake up to the truth. And as I mentioned on the show before, you know who invented the telescope? Yeah, I didn't think so. You know why? Because it was invented by 9 people at the exact same time on different sides of the world. Okay? People come up with the same ideas. And, well, basically, the power is not in coming up with the idea. The power is in actual bringing it to fruition, producing it. That's what I do with a lot of my stuff. And today we have a guest, very special guest, Art Olivier, who made a film called Operation Terror, which is like exactly what I was just talking about. Art, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Vinny.
How are you, mate? Art, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, mate, I can hear you.
Okay.
Okay. Well, why don't you just tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do, and also I was led to believe we might be having Paul Cross as well on the show.
Could be. He's not here, but yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll find out that later.
Yeah. Operation Terror is the 9/11 story that you were not supposed to know. I did a lot of research on the events of 9/11 to put the story together. And what I did is I took bits and pieces of different stories that are underreported in the news, such as Able Danger, the collapse of Building 7, the trial of Zachariah Massawi, or I should say the arrest of him, the raid of Alliance Scientific, what went on in the Emergency Operations Center and underneath the White House. All this information and then made a feature film out of it and kind of put the pieces together.
Yeah. And I just witnessed the trailer earlier this morning, and it's very cloak and dagger.
Yeah. It's we call it a political thriller. but, yeah, we, you know, of course, I'm going to make it entertaining, exciting, but that anybody can watch it. You know, it's just not for the people that have done the research. And that was the whole point of the movie is I wanted to reach people that, you know, maybe don't know absolutely nothing about what happened on 9/11 or only know what they have seen in the media. Because most people just simply will not do what like you and I will do, go out and spend a lot of time researching everything. You know, almost everybody will sit down for an hour and a half to watch an entertaining feature film.
Hey, Art, you're kind of crackling up a little bit on the line there. Is your face right on the microphone of it, or? It's a pretty terrible line there. If you've got a backup phone number, or if you're able to sign into your Skype or something of that nature, we'd really appreciate it here because it just sounds awful.
How does this sound? Does this sound any better?
No, not really. It's just a it's kind of a digital crackle on it kind of thing.
Okay. You can put me on Skype.
Okay. Well, we need to just add you in there. I've sent you a contact request a couple of times, so you just need to sign into it, add that, and we'll be able to bring you in that way. Shouldn't be too much of a challenge if we can get all that sorted. But I've always figured to myself, you know, being a person who watches a lot of movies, and then being a person who starts to get into a lot of conspiracy theories.
Vinny, is this any better?
Yeah, that is better.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was my phone was on. I was on another call and it was on speaker, so that's probably why it was not working so good.
Okay, well, that's much better.
Okay.
Well, anyway, as I was saying, I was talking about how I was watching a lot of movies in my life and then got into a lot of conspiracy theories and stuff like that. And you wonder just how far the lines of reality and fiction truly blur.
Well, and can you truly tell the difference? With this movie, you're going to get a lot more reality than you're going to get watching the nightly news, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's what was that movie? V for Vendetta said authors use lies to tell the truth, whereas politicians use lies to cover the truth up.
Right.
And I wanted to know just about your personal story and what kind of woke you up about 9/11 and got you into all of this in the first place.
Well, I'm. I was a politician. I was the city council here in Bellflower, California. I was the mayor. Being in politics, you discover how corrupt the whole system really is. I mean, it's corrupt from the local level all the way to the top. And I also ran for vice president against Dick Cheney in the Libertarian Party and for governor against Arnold Schwarzenegger. So I've been involved a lot in politics. You know, when I ran for the higher positions, of course, it was more of an educational type of experience, you know, knowing that I'm not going to get the media attention I would need to win those positions, but just to educate people. And with the 9/11 event, I think it's a great way to educate people because this is something that's fairly recent, and we don't have to wait generations for the information to come out, like, for example, the sinking of the Lusitania. You know, that was always a conspiracy theory that they were shipping arms over to Britain. Well, I think it was in the 1990s, the divers went down there and they discovered, yeah, the hull is full of arms. So, you know, it took generations for that to be proven to be true. And but with 9/11, you know, we've already got the information. You know, we have so many eyewitnesses and videos and photographs and scientific evidence that we don't need the to wait for generations for the truth to get out there. We just need for people to see the information, and once they can see it, you know, most people will be able to figure out, oh yeah, this was not the way we were told the events happened.
Mm. The general rule of thumb is if somebody comes up with a conspiracy theory, they're probably correct, especially if the government denies it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, what the government has, you know, our government has come up with is a conspiracy theory. You know, their theory was that there were 19 hijackers with box cutters that stormed these airplanes, and they ran them into buildings and made the buildings collapse. And, you know, it's a conspiracy theory. It's a very wild conspiracy theory, and it's also a theory that has been proven to be false. And really, in science, it's really not even considered a theory anymore after it's already been proven to be false. So it doesn't even rise to the level of a conspiracy theory any longer.
Well, see, the image of a politician sitting on the steps with you smoking a joint and going, you know what brought down the boxes? You know what brought down the towers, man? Jet fuel. Okay, jet fuel did it.
Well, yeah, you know, you know, and that was known immediately, you know, from the politicians that were on the TV on 9/11. And even the there's a great video of Fox reporting, you know, they were pretending like they were reporting people off the street, and they were actually actors. And this one guy that's known as Harley Guy, you know, he comes up with a whole scenario. Oh, yeah, of course the buildings were going to collapse because of the tremendous fires that were in the buildings. And he, you know, he came up with that theory right on 9/11. So, you know, they already had the scientific information that they needed already on 9/11 without doing any investigation whatsoever.
Yeah. And you have a look at, say, firefighters for 9/11 truth. They all have protocols to follow about what you do in investigations with any fire to determine how it started. Not a single one of them was followed on 9/11. They have no idea what started the fire. You know, they allege that there was a plane, but we've got no evidence.
No, yeah, the evidence is, of course, lacking in every one of the events. You know, supposedly there were four airplanes involved. And any time an airplane crashes, what is immediately done is you pick up the pieces, and they have time change serial numbers stamped into the parts. I used to work at McDonnell Douglas and Boeing, and this is what we do. You know, when a plane is in service for a certain period of time, these parts have to be changed. And none of the four planes, not one single part was found with these time change parts. And this is the only time in modern history in America where the time change parts were not found, and it happened four times on 9/11. So obviously, a proper investigation wasn't done on collecting on the parts of the airplanes. And the same thing with the building steel in the airplanes. They immediately took the steel and put it on two trucks and shipped it over to China to be melted down before anybody could actually look at the steel. So this is, definitely not the way you would cover a crime scene. And we make reference to it in the movie.
It's not the way that they would cover a crime scene, but it is the way they would cover someone one up.
Right. Yeah, it's the way to cover it up. Yeah, in the movie, we make reference to the FEMA. FEMA is the Federal Emergency Management Association, I guess.
Agency,
that's right. That takes care of emergencies in America, like when we have a flood or something like this. So FEMA set up in New York City the night before 9/11. So they would be there, you know, available to take over the entire operation as the event occurred.
That's interesting. Because the head of FEMA, when Christchurch had our big earthquake down here in New Zealand, the head of FEMA was incidentally here, and he was with nine other congressmen who left, but he stayed behind, and then the quake hit, and he started coordinating the response.
Wow, that's interesting.
These people pop up everywhere, and they seem to be either psychic or whatever they got going on is planned.
Right, yeah, and there were so many operations that were planned on 9/11, and we go over that in the movie. We have a scene where the head CIA agent is meeting with Dick Cheney, and he's telling him all the different operations that are going to be happening on 9/11, and And he talks about the how all the airplanes from the East Coast will be out on the West Coast for this operation and that operation. And so, yeah, they were all sorts of operations going on that helped them, enable them to make sure that, you know, none of the drones or none of the flights or anything else would get shot down.
Yeah, yeah, more operations than a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the confusion that gets thrown up. Like, let's say you're doing an operation and you're trying to actually find a real enemy, and you're in the middle of a drill where you've got 1,000 fake enemies on your screen. How are you going to tell what's what? And how are you going to respond effectively? Well, the answer is you can't. And that's the idea, because you can use it as a cover to pull off an operation. We'll be right back after the break. Without Olivier, the maker of Operation Terror. You can go watch that trailer on YouTube during the break if you want. We'll be right back.
The word is about, there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And also you can join us in the chat room at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, or just Google Vinnie Eastwood chat. The NSA knows where to find me. And technically they know where to find all of us. My very special guest, Art Olivier, maker of the new film, movie, which I thought the trailer was pretty cool, actually. Operation Terror, and you can find that on YouTube if you wish. Art, welcome back.
Thank you, Vinny.
Now, being an actually in the game of politics, I've spoken to a couple of number of politicians here in New Zealand, and I presume the system's much the same. You get in, you have a vetting process, like an indoctrination ceremony or whatever, and then if you try to do good and what have you, they simply produce a whole bunch of rules about why you can't do good.
It's tough. I was on the city council. I was elected for a 4-year term. Ended up being 5 years because the majority of the council decided to cancel the election 1 year and extend our terms in office. And so for the first 3 years, I wasn't getting anywhere. There was 2 honest people on the council out of 5. But during the midterm elections, I was able to get another person on the council, so I had a majority. And then that 2 years, I was able to accomplish a lot that I could not accomplish otherwise.
That little click that we had on your phone line before is back.
Oh, I'm sorry. Click, huh? No.
Yeah, it was the same thing that we had before when you had it on speakerphone or something, or you had somebody else calling you, or...
Oh, yeah, you know what, that
might be it.
Okay, let's hold on just a second. Let me delete that.
Okay. Right, that should be working a little bit better now. Sorry about the dead air there, ladies and gentlemen. It's a thing at live radio. You just got to roll with it. Technical issues happen, and you can't really blame people or anything like that for it, because it's technology, you know? We don't know how this stuff works. I don't, you know. If my microphone broke down, I wouldn't be able to fix it.
Art, all right. Back? Yes.
Yeah, that's fine. That you sound better.
Okay, great.
Okay, sorry. Continue. We were talking about your political career and stuff like that, and how it's tough, and there were only 2 honest people on the council out of 5.
Yeah, we had 2, and then we got during the midterm elections, I got another person on there, and so I had 3, and I had the majority. And then I was actually able to to do a lot of the things that we wanted to do. We actually competitively bid the all of our projects. We, you know, just brought the cost way down of doing business. We had to cut taxes. We quadrupled the number of streets we paved. We tripled the number of trees we could trim. You know, you can get a lot done if you have honest people on the council. But the people, you know, the majority are going to be working with the contractors to give monopolies to certain businesses so they can in turn, you know, feed your campaign or, you know, take care of you financially in other ways. And so it really makes a difference. You know, and for the other people, I mean, for me, I made $8,000 a year. And, you know, the guys that I'm running against, you know, they can make a half a million a year with all the kickbacks and bribes. And so for them, it's a much more important position to hold than it is for an honest person.
Well, that's an interesting concept there, and I've likened it to the fact that all hierarchical structures are like that. If you're corrupt, you don't kind of build on your reputation, you don't do good things and stuff like that in order to earn people's trust. You simply get bought off, paid off, and then you get advanced because of your scumbaggery.
Right, right. And the way that that you control a political entity, whether it's local, state, federal, whatever it is you control the media. And once you have control over the media, you can pretty much elect who you want to without any opposition. Because anybody that comes in that's not under your control, that would be running, simply won't get the media coverage. And if they do get media coverage, it'll be bad media coverage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it's kind of like it's playing a rigged game, isn't it, in that sense? How do you win a rigged game? And the answer is to cheat. And these people, I think these people figured it out.
Yeah. You know, at the local level, I mean, you know, Bellflower is a city of 77,000, and I was able to, you know, I had built up a reputation on fighting the corrupt powers. I went door to door to high propensity voters and was able to win without all the money, without the media coverage or anything else. And but you get into a higher level, it just becomes impossible.
Impossible. So what was your point of disillusionment then that you decided to leave it?
Well, we had a lot of problems. I mean, I had a rental property that I was told that they were going to make me bulldoze it down, and then it went up in an arson fire, and the children that lived there barely got out alive, and we had young children about the same age, and you know, it really hits home when things like that happen. And we had bullets, you know, in our house. You know, they shot at the house, and a neighboring mayor, you know, he got shot in the head after one of his council meetings. And so my wife was under a severe amount of stress the entire time I was on there, and I couldn't put her through another 4 years of that.
So in that case, your wife wasn't out campaigning for you in the Michelle Obama sense of the word, going, four more years.
Hardly, no.
She'd be actually campaigning against you. You know, I don't want four more years. I don't want four more years.
Yeah, that'd be more like it.
Yeah. Well, you know, and this is the thing. The relationships that we're in, they both restrict and enable the things that you want to do in your life, kind of thing. And I've found most times, if you're a smart man, you will listen to your missus when she's telling you not to do something.
Right.
You know, because otherwise your home life doesn't get too bad. And at the point of this, she's usually looking out for your well-being, or at least this has been the perspective in my relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't always take that advice, but but you're right.
You don't have to. You don't have to always take her advice, like, yes, dear, or something like that. But if she's really, really, really insistent, sometimes it just pays to go, yes, dear.
Yeah, but then also I retired from being being the mayor in 1999, and then in 2000 I got the nomination to run for vice president, and anyway, that was very, very exciting, traveling all over the country and running against Bush and Cheney.
But you weren't getting drive-bys at your rallies or anything like that, were you?
No, no. When you're in a position where you can't win, you can't make a difference, they leave you alone. And so I had no problems at all when I ran for vice president. I actually got very good local media coverage. You know, the national, of course, media pretends like you don't exist, but locally we did really well. And it was a little bit different story when I ran against Schwarzenegger in 2006, because at the time I had more political experience than Schwarzenegger had. I did the things that people in his party want done, you know, cutting taxes, improving services, those kind of things. I'm taller and bigger than Arnold Schwarzenegger, and so they don't want me standing side by side with him, you know, because he has an image to uphold. So when I ran that time, he actually had somebody on his staff that had a full time job of sabotaging my campaign. Anytime we put something up on the website of where we're going to be and what show we're going to be on, they always got a call from the Schwarzenegger campaign. They would give them threats or bribes to make sure that the event was canceled. About half of my events got canceled, and the other half, the people told me what happened. They said, hey, you know, we got a call from Schwarzenegger's campaign. They told me not to run this thing, or they told me not to run the story, or put you on the air, or allow this event to go on, or that we got they got an offer for I had one guy that was working on the campaign for free. He got an offer from the Schwarzenegger campaign to work for his campaign for $1,000 a week, you know, because he was unemployed at the time, and it was very I think his wife wanted him to do it, but you know, he held his ground and said, no, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to work for some corrupt politician. So that's the kind of things that happens, you know. Not that they really thought that I could win. They just thought that I may take enough votes away from him to allow the Democrat to win. So they wouldn't allow that to happen. And they also told them when we had a debate set up, then, of course, we got canceled because it was told, well, Arnold won't show up at the debate if you're there. So if you can make a difference, then you're not left alone.
Well, it sounded like Arnold was treating you like one of the Expendables.
Treating what?
And he was treating you like one of the Expendables.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I doubt if he even knew who I was, but his staff surely did.
Well, I was wondering as well like this, because that's quite interesting. But it's not unexpected, considering he's the son of an SS officer or something like that, and he wears Nazi belt buckles with skull and crossbones on them to his political rallies and stuff like that. Not surprising, the tactics, really.
Right, right.
You know, didn't he go to Bohemian Grove as well?
Yes. See? Yes, and we also have Bohemian Grove in our movie. We have one of the leaders of the council is meeting with somebody else and, you know, talking about, you know, going through some strategy at the Bohemian Grove.
And there's also a lot of debauch stuff that goes out there. There's more of an R18 nature that gay porn stars and stuff like that getting out there to mess around with, have some fun with the politicians and what have you. So you get to the point where the ruling elite are not just corrupt, they're sick, very sick people. And they're not only corrupt and sick, but they're dangerous. And you can't go up against somebody like that using truth, honesty, and integrity, because they know how to subvert it at every turn. And I was just thinking about this today before coming on the show, actually. What I'd love to do is have some former CIA agents who are operatives and COINTELPRO agents, things of that nature, who literally know all the tactics that are used by the intelligence agencies to do things like elections, media scumbaggery, hits, denigration, all of these other tactics, the eclectic mix of things that they do. I would love to actually have a team of truthers be trained in all of those tactics, not to use them, but to come up with counter strategies so that any time that they do use those things against you, you've got a counter strategy in place that can cut them off at the knees and completely destroy it. Because the key to, I feel, winning an intelligence war is knowing more about your enemy than they do.
Yeah, you know, after being in politics for so long, I mean, I can smell it immediately when something comes up on the media that is a false flag, or you know, it's just a over the top story. I mean, I just see it immediately, you know, and you know, it usually takes a few weeks to prove it after it comes out, and that's what's tough. You know, and that's the same thing that happened to me on the city council. I mean, things would happen, and I couldn't immediately prove it, but by the time I could, it was already done. So it is difficult because they do have a lot of resources.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see the film Wag the Dog?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The whole Wag the Dog thing is, I found it interesting, the very first press conference they did. They throw out all these red herrings, like there's no B-3 bomber, and so on and so forth. And they basically just make a whole bunch of stuff up that they don't need to remember and people will forget about and what have you, simply to delay the response so that they can get all of that stuff ready. In New Zealand, at least, how the government works is if a government minister or an agency does something corrupt, what they do is they appoint a commission to investigate it. So that way, whenever the corrupt politician is asked any questions about it, he gets to say, well, I've just got to wait for the findings of the commission.
Right.
I'd love to be able to come up with a big book of counterintelligence strategies or something like that. Counterintelligence to counterintelligence. That'd be a cool book for somebody to write, I think. Even though I don't read books. Right, we'll be right back after the break with Art Olivia, maker of Operation Terror. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
And gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know about the Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride in your water? What you know about the bleeding uranium in the mortar? What you know about AIPAC controlling the reporter? What's wrong with the world? People kill people that other people command. Middle East is a modern day attack on a native land. Project eugenics planned on the common man, expand the military-industrial complex. Annex foreign soil with chemical objects. Vex the psyop attacking your conscience. Next, your brain.
And my very special guest now joining us live on the webcam. For those of you who watch the show on YouTube, you'll be able to experience this nicely. Art Olivier. And I was going to say as well that it's the experiences that we have in our lives, particularly the bad experiences, that kind of forge us, much in the same way iron would be put under intense heat so that it would become stronger and be turned into steel, much in the same way that a person who goes through trauma or terrible experiences or experiences corruption, for instance, will become a much hardier individual who is much more capable of dealing with these things that they've already seen. Now, Art, welcome back. I would like to ask you to keep going on about your political career and things like that, because that Arnold Schwarzenegger was a story was very, very interesting. And how did you get into the filmmaking game? Had you always been a filmmaker or anything?
Oh no, actually, I was.
Oh, hold on, Art. You've still got the phone on speakerphone. I think you can probably hang that one up. We've got you on Skype. Yeah, we're getting a feedback loop there. Hold on a second. Hey, Art, you're still on the phone. If you want to be on the Skype, we can bring you in. Just give me a ring again on it, but make sure you hang up the phone first.
Yeah, the Skype wasn't working. But anyway, I haven't always been a filmmaker. I did have a little cable TV show before I got elected to the city council, which helped me get elected. But I was a real estate developer. I would do subdivisions, build houses. And doing a movie is somewhat similar to that, where you draw up the plans, you write up a script, you hire subcontractors to get the thing built, you get the permits and those kind of things, and then after you get it all done, you got to market it and sell it. So it's a little bit similar to what I was doing.
In other words, it's the business of creating an illusion. So being a politician, you must have been well versed.
Yeah, sort of.
or at least you must have seen it happen all around you. I was also thinking to myself about the perennial problem of corruption and just exactly how you can even keep these people out of the political game. And I haven't been able to ascertain any kind of strategy that might work yet.
No, it's difficult. Voting doesn't. I mean, there's a saying: if voting made a difference, it would be illegal. The best thing we can do is to try to inform enough people of what's really going on, and you get enough people that won't put up with it anymore. We have the ability to fight back.
I think that this is the whole idea behind critical mass. And I'm not entirely in agreement on that, because what I've seen over the years is that it's usually one individual who basically dedicates their lives to something that will usually make the difference. One person dogging that corrupt politician wherever they go, ticking them off and derailing their campaigns and stuff like that. Like, for example, gang stalking. You know how horrible gang stalking can be for people. So I was just thinking, why aren't people gang stalking the politicians all over the place now? Why isn't it that every single time that they go down and sit at a cafe to have a coffee with another corrupt politician or a contractor or something like that, there aren't truthers with cameras and microphones shoving in their face and asking them to explain why they're such a frickin' scumbag?
Well, here in this country, you get arrested if you do that, so that's probably has something to do with it.
Oh, well, there we go. Asked and answered. Thank you. Now I'm miserable. But it actually does happen more often than not, or at least nowadays. People like Luke Rutkowski in New York going up and ambushing politicians all over the place at their political meetings and asking the questions that others would not. And specifically filming them asking the questions and filming the reactions of these trash. That gives amplification to the issue that simply going up and doing the right thing in and of itself does not. Because you see it, the politician who's with you see it, but nobody else does. So there's nobody to draw them up on it. There's no real public record of it. And if it's in written form, or something like that, it's just not accessible to most of the population who just don't really read anymore.
No, yeah, unfortunately, yeah. Of course, your masses is always they're easily controlled, and all you have to do is show them something on TV, and they'll believe that that's the reality. I don't know if we'll ever be able to reach the masses, but we do have to. But like you said, yeah, there is a critical mass that we have to reach, and once we've reached that, then we can make the changes. Because throughout history, it's never been the majority that have changed things. So this country wasn't founded on a majority. It was a minority of people that decided to rebel against the British, and most people thought they were crazy, to go up against the greatest military might in the entire world, to have these colonialist go up against that was just seemed insane, because if they failed, they'd all be hung. And but we, you know, there was enough of them that decided to fight against the British, and that's how we created this country. So we just need enough people to be able to fight back.
And it's an interesting point as well. It doesn't take a cast of thousands. In the Revolutionary War, what was it, 3%, 4% of the population were either fighting or supporting the forces that were fighting against the British overthrow?
Yeah, I think it was higher than that, but it clearly was not a majority.
Mm-hmm. Well, never underestimate the power of a small, determined minority, right?
Right.
And that goes for evil as well as good.
Yeah, it's a pretty small minority that runs this world, but they do have control over the media, and they do have control over all the major military and intelligence services, and so that gives them a lot of power.
Well, it's the centralization of control that I find is the power. Like, for example, I've got a centralized control of my body. So I can punch people, I can kick people if I so chose to give that order. I can insult people, I can tell lies about people out of my mouth if I so gave that order. So who's the brain in all of this? Because we see the body and we see the hits that it's giving out, and we see the lies that it tells. I mean, these are simply the puppets, the representation of the brain of the elite. Who do you reckon's up at the tippy top making these decisions?
Well, at the very top, of course, it's the international bankers, because once you control a currency of a nation, you control that nation, and the international bankers control the currency of almost every nation on Earth.
Yeah, this is true. This is true, and I would like to see a return to the Constitutional Republic of the United States, with Congress issuing the currency, not these people who have no allegiance to any flag.
Yeah, well, I would even go further than that. If we could just get rid of the legal tender laws and allow people to freely deal with each other in the manner that they choose, then we can get back to some kind of normalcy on the currency. You know, the dollar wouldn't have to immediately go away, but they would not be able to inflate it at the rate they're doing now, because they would have competition. But the way it is now is that if you're owed a debt, the person that owes you that debt can pay you in Federal Reserve notes, and by law you have to accept it, even though those notes may be worth 20% less now than when you made the contract. So by eliminating legal tender laws, people can draw up their own contracts, and they could use gold to pay off their contracts. They can use barter. They can all sorts of different things they can do, but it should be up to the individuals themselves and not to the government.
Yeah, like that way you give everybody equal field of opportunity to pay off whatever debts they've got in any way they can. Because let's say or something, you're a farmer and your stock is worth a lot of money, but they want cash for it instead. You've got to find a way of turning that crop into cash before you can actually pay off your debts. But I don't know. Could you actually explain that a little bit further? I mean, how would a currency work without legal tender laws that require you to pay things back like that?
No. The legal tender law says that you have to pay back in Federal Reserve notes. Let's say I was going to charge you to be on this show, and we made an agreement, and you said, well, I'm going to give you, I don't know what currency you got over there in New Zealand, but I was going to give you, you know, half a dozen dollars.
New Zealand dollars.
You're going to give me 1,000 New Zealand dollars, and I say, well, you know, I really don't want that. I would rather have half an ounce of gold. And so we make an agreement that you would pay me off in a half ounce of gold. Well, under legal tender laws, you could come back and just say, I'm not going to give you a half ounce of gold. I'm going to give you the 1,000 New Zealand dollars. And by law, would have to accept that.
Okay, hold on a sec. We're coming to break. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Hour number two coming up. 218-339-8525. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts, and things aren't always as they appear. My very special guest is Art Olivier, who's made the film Operation Terror, a fanciful work of art that, in fact, kind of looks into the beautiful, beautiful conspiracy. I mean, you've got to hand it to the conspirators. It was very well orchestrated from start to finish, from orchestration to cover-up. They've done well. Not well enough, as it turns out. Art, welcome back.
Thank you, Vinny. Yeah, we actually, that's a big part of the movie, and near the end there, is all the mistakes that were made. And we highlight all these mistakes because, you see, it was done very well, but it really wasn't. It's just that the media is just so overwhelming, people tend to dismiss all the mistakes that were made. For example, the way that my director found out about the 9/11 events is he was a hardcore Republican, and he was doing a documentary about the Bush White House at the time. And he was in Washington, D.C. on 9/11, and so when the attacks occurred, he went over to the Pentagon, and he's looking and he's going, there was no airplane here that crashed. You know, look at the lawn. It's in perfect shape. There's no way a plane would have fit there. It's a lie. If this is a lie, everything's a lie. And, you know, he immediately discovered that. And then if you look at the pictures, even before they collapsed the building, there's just a small missile hole inside of the building. I mean, to allow a picture like that to get out, you know, you can search it, the Pentagon hole on Google, and you can just see the picture that's by a car, Pentagon hole car, and you'll see the picture I'm talking about. It's just a small little missile hole. Well, obviously a 757 didn't fit into this little tiny hole. You couldn't even drive a truck through. So that was a mistake. And then they had a reporter, you know, saying, well, you know, there was just a small hole there. They had a reporter at the Shanksville site saying that there was no sign of any airplane there. All there was is a hole in the ground. That was a mistake. They should have had some airplane parts in the field. You know, the plane that was shot down or blown up in Pennsylvania, I'm sure it was supposed to have parts that would land in the field so it would look like an airplane had crashed there. But, you know, all there was an empty hole. BBC reporting on the collapse of Building 7 23 minutes before it actually collapsed. Obviously, that was a mistake because the building is still right behind the shoulder of the reporter that's reporting on that. All those things, of course, are in my movie. We highlight that. We recreated all the news footage throughout the day, and we do it in an entertaining fashion, but we go word for word from the actual news footage from 9/11.
And so you've got proper news footage from the day and stuff like that inserted into the film?
No, I'm not allowed to use their actual news footage, but I go word for word for what they used with actors and actors and special effects and everything that I needed to recreate the actual news footage.
Well, see, this is the interesting thing that I've found about the whole 9/11 story is that it's so in your face and so obviously not real that it could have only been made in Hollywood, and so many documentary films have been made about it. There's so much talk radio, and I feel that the progress that is being made is not ridiculously large. You know, like what are we 10 years down the track? 11 years down the track, sorry, and not one single 9/11 terrorist has gone to jail yet.
No, no, you know, because, well, they have firm control over our government, so, yeah, I don't look to seeing that changing anytime real soon.
Mm-hmm. Should we put a date on it? You know, by 2025, 9/11 will be officially an inside job and the terrorists will go to jail.
No, you know, what it's going to take people in government, people in high positions in the military to do a coup d'etat. I mean, that's what's going to have to happen in this country. We can't change the political power structure here. At the election box, that's just not really feasible. So, you know, some of the people in the military are getting upset of a lot of the different things that have happened to them, and who knows? Maybe there will be enough people that will be able to turn things around. But you know, the I'm sure the Navy SEALs aren't happy with what happened in Pakistan to the SEAL Team 6. And, you know, there are a lot of people that that are in the military that do want to change things. Whether or not they'll have the power and the will to do it, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. You ever seen the film Starship Troopers?
No.
No, in the start of the film, basically it's a futuristic fascist society or whatever. And in the start of the film, they have a little classroom. And he says, "This year we explore the failure of democracy, and how the social sciences brought our world to the brink of chaos. And we talked about the veterans, how they took control and imposed the stability that has lasted for generations since." And I'm starting to think that it's quite prophetic in a way. Because what we see, like, for example, in Egypt with the military that's trained to support the president, basically at all cost, the military staging a coup there. And now you've basically just got a military dictatorship slash Muslim Brotherhood, which is another CIA organization. So the crossroads that we're coming to here is that I think that if we are going to have any kind of revolution, it has to be a mass public awareness, non-violent revolution in order for it to work. With the veterans and military and police and sheriffs and public servants and things of that nature declaring themselves openly part of the resistance, who will be similar to the Black Panthers, I think, where they armed blacks in neighborhoods and things of that nature so that they would be able to run quickly to places of police brutality and point guns at police and say, stop hitting them. And as a direct result of that, non-violent, actually, just having arms there, saying you're not the only guys with guns, so you can't treat us like slaves anymore, kind of mentality. Do you think there might be a resurgence of that in the future? Because I'm definitely afraid of it becoming a shooting war.
Yeah, we are having some luck with county sheriffs throughout the country. Richard Mack has been organizing some meetings, and they've had hundreds of sheriffs that show up and talk about the rights and of the people and the power of the county sheriff to resist federal tyranny. And so we've had a little bit of luck with that. In highly populated areas, you know, it's pretty strict gun control. It's difficult, and typically the county sheriffs like here in Los Angeles County, the sheriffs are extremely corrupt, so we don't expect any help in that respect. But in the smaller populated counties, there are a lot of honest sheriff out there that will help the people. And then that may be what happens, where the federal troops come into the heavily populated areas to take control, but there could still be a resistance out there in some of the outlying areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, violence, in my opinion, is only for defense or retaliation, never for initiation of force.
So right. I think
the only time when I would approve the veterans fighting back is if the government shoots first, and because they want us to shoot first, but so they can demonize the patriots and things like that. So, and I do know that the FBI is infiltrating and inciting many veterans and gun owner groups and things of that nature in order to get people to do that. So not only do gun owners need to know how to shoot, they need to know when to not shoot, and also they need to know how to spot moles and spies in their midst.
Right, yeah, and the government is concerned about that. There have been several veterans that have been picked up for putting things about 9/11 truth on their Facebook pages and those kind of things. So they are concerned with veterans that they put out publications also, you know, talking about potential terrorists and returning vets are on the list. So that's something that they're looking at too.
Exactly. And I think the reason why that is veterans, unlike anybody else, actually see what the government policy is from the barrel of a gun, and they'll be the ones who have to the ones who bear the burden of that kind of experience in society.
The returning vets coming from Afghanistan, they come back and they go, you know, they understand that they were not out there fighting the Al-Qaeda, you know, they're out there protecting the opium fields for the drug lords. And so they come back with a better understanding on how the government and how the world really works. And when, you know, people with that kind of knowledge are a threat to the government. Pat Tillman, he's a great example of what happens. Right after 9/11, he was a professional football player here in the United States, in the Arizona Cardinals. And he decided, him and his brother, who was a minor league baseball player, decided that they were going to join the Army and they were going to go out and go to Afghanistan and get Osama bin Laden and bring him to justice. Well, it didn't take too long for them to figure out, you know there was no Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, and their assignment was to protect the opium fields. And so Pat Tillman got together with some peace activists in the United States, and he had planned on becoming a war protester when he got back. But unfortunately, he was, the government said that he was leading a charge against the Taliban, and he was killed in action. And then they found out, well, that wasn't true, that they changed the story, and they said, well, he was hit from friendly fire. And then that story even got changed when the coroner came out, and he wouldn't play ball, and he says, no, he was hit from less than 10 yards away with 3 rounds to the forehead. You know, he was executed. So, but the people, that are coming back are a threat to the government because they do understand what's going on over there.
Yeah, and the difficulty is we can't have we can't have leaders anymore. Have you noticed that whenever we've got one guy off on his own or whatever? There's already methodologies developed to bump them off and or demonize them or neutralize people, things of that nature. And I'm thinking now it's going to be large, wide-ranging, stretching, collaborative efforts that will be the agents of change, I feel. Because if we're acting independently and we don't have large groups of diverse supporters in many, many sectors and things like that, it means that we won't have a presence in any of the sectors that might come after us, I think. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think what's important for people to realize is that the if you're a conservative, your enemy is not the liberal, and vice versa. And because that's what the media tries to instill into people, that, it's the left versus the right, Democrats versus Republicans, or whatever, however they want to play it. You know, that's not the case. You know, it's the people versus the tyrants. And I've been a keynote speaker at Tea Party rallies. I've gone to the Occupy protests, anti-war protests. You know, and there are people there that believe that the left or the right is the enemy, and you know, you just have to explain to them, you know, that's not the case. There's a lot of common ground between the left and the right. Nobody wants to support the Baker bailouts and the endless wars and ongoing deficits.
We're just coming to break now. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Art Olivia. Call in 218-339-8525. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. If you have any questions for either myself or my guest, Art Olivier, the maker of Operation Terror, new film coming out about 9/11 and the background scenes, and therein, the number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. So please call in if you can. Phone lines are open. Now, Art, when we talk about all of these things, particularly on radio and all that, there's certain things that are of our personal belief that we don't have evidence for, that we kind of choose to shy away from and not talk about on radio because you might be misunderstood or judged or something. But I like to assure my guests that I've a very intelligent audience. In fact, most of them are probably a little bit brighter than me, but and I'm very non-judgmental. So if there's anything that you've got that's of a personal opinion nature that maybe you don't have evidence for or something like that, that you may normally not say at a political rally or something of that nature, I like to give my guests the space to talk about that kind of stuff here. So if you've got anything, go for your life. Art, are you there? We seem to have lost him for some reason. Don't know what's going on there. But, yeah. Right. In that case, changing topic, onto the stories that come out in the media and the fear that connotes for them. Recently, there's been some stories about the amount of bullets that the American police forces are getting. And they're actually ordering more bullets, substantially more bullets than the Department of Defense. The whole Department of Defense has been ordering less bullets than the United States police forces have recently. And there's a lot of scary implications to that. And people are screaming, yelling about it, freaking out, going nuts, the whole kit and shaboodle. And I'm just sitting there and I'm going, man, I can't listen to this. You know, I gotta turn this off. It's too much fear, too much anger, too much upsetness. I can't stand it. I'd rather listen to the Vinnie Eastwood show. This show's like it evolves past that sort of thing. It's like, yes, I know that I'm going to die. Yes, I know that I'm completely screwed. Yes, I know that they're trying to destroy every single freedom that I ever had in my entire existence and exterminate like 90% plus of the population, and that they've got GMOs everywhere, and that aspartame's in everything, and that fluoride's in all the water, and you get chlorine gas when you have your showers. I know. Do you see me being worried, though? Heck no! I ain't worried, because I know that I'm screwed anyway. What I am instead intent on, focused on doing, is talking about this stuff for those people who already know about it, preaching to the choir, as it were, to help you be like me and not really have a shaking incident where you're freaking out and losing grip on reality and losing grip on your sanity. Okay? That's the purpose of this show. Once you learn this information, once you get past the fear part of it, you don't want to be afraid anymore and you want to just learn how to deal with it, that's when you'll start listening to this show. Okay? This is the abridged version of a truth of counseling session. All right? You may be lying down on a couch, you may be sitting in a chair, or you may be listening from your smartphone in some park that's real close to your house, because the government provides free Wi-Fi for people, but not housing for you. Okay? This is the place where you can have some fun, call in, and talk about whatever you like. For example, my first caller of the evening, Elizabeth. Welcome to the program.
Hello, my friend. I thought I would jump in here while you're waiting for your guest reconnection. First off, I wanted to say what a fabulous interview you had yesterday, and that is so high on my list to get that word out to the planet that, you know, they are intentionally making us so stupid we can't look at something as blatant as the whole, you know, September 11th trauma and not see that it's, you know, as your guest is saying, just total malarkey. But I think drilling that point that, you know, just you've got to stay healthy. The aspartame is preventing neurons from firing. It's making everybody fat. Anyway, that was my first point. I just wanted to say what a great job you did.
Mm-mm. Well, you know, it's the interesting thing about aspartame, you know. It prevents your neurons from firing, but it doesn't prevent morons who legalized it from getting fired. You know what I'm saying? I have this great fear, Elizabeth, that people will stop wanting to know. You know what I'm saying? Like there's this much and that much and so on and so forth that you think, nah, I've learned enough. I don't want to know anymore. I'm okay now.
Yeah, and the only place I differed from your guest from yesterday, the doctor, is she really felt it was money and political. And I absolutely believe in my heart that they know what they're doing, that, you know, there's a KFC popping up on every corner for the bad food, the, you know, aspartame is in everything that was shoved down everybody's throats. It was to make them stupid. We've got, whatever, 40,000 cell phone towers, you know, per state, beaming out, you know, low-frequency range to make people more sedated, and then the pharmaceuticals, and it's just, it's a complete and total onslaught on the human being, where they are so cubicalized and stressed that they can't make those decisions. But anyway, all that health part aside, I think that is one pillar of it. And exactly as your guest is saying, that the other pillar is, you know, we do need some intervention. It's bad in the U.S. I don't know if the rest of the world is aware of that, but, you know, it isn't, you know, we're incarcerated over here. And unless the veterans and the inside military, you know, do a few strategic things, I'm not seeing that element being helped.
Mm-hmm. And it's true what you say, and I have disagreements with my guests from time to time about certain issues, but I don't make those disagreements public, because what you do is you try and find the points that you agree upon and agree upon them, because the points that you disagree upon, you could argue till the cows come home, and basically it's just not their time to accept that information yet. I mean let's face facts here. None of us are robots. We can't just be reprogrammed and suddenly accept a new program, can we? It takes a little bit of time, kind of like a relationship with your own thoughts and minds, very similar to a relationship you have with somebody of the opposite sex. You may not agree on everything and things like that, but at the end of the day, if you're willing to just keep talking and keep accepting and keep trying to see it from another person's point of view, eventually you get along.
You're absolutely correct, and that was no diss at all. She is out there in the public, and she is backed by scientific studies, and her whole, she's, you know, just got all the information in place. And I think it would be, you know, going one step too far for her to have said that this was all very calculated. Now, we, being the outers of scumbaggery, as they say, I guess, in New Zealand, that we can say, I think it was a big, you know, overall plan, you know, to put like 18 prongs together and point them at humanity.
What's the point of which you stop talking about it and start doing something about it? You know, this is what everybody seems to wonder. And I don't know. I think it's just about kicking yourself into action. Any moment could be that moment. So when you do it, it's perfect.
Yeah, I think there's going to have to be a number of, like I said, fronts on this. There's got to be a little bit of intervention, because there's just such a control system in place. People just aren't even aware of, you know, the prison systems that they've got ready and waiting, and, you know, how, you know, and we all say hi to our little NSA handlers who are listening intently on everything we say and putting it in our files. And, you know, there's just got to be different prongs. So there's got to be some sort of approach to that. And there's got to be what you do is trying to bring an awakening, you know. And I think there's a whole, whatever you want to call it, another dimensional deal where there's got to be people ready, if there is some sort of freak-out event, to calm the masses, to, you know, whatever, envision something different, since it seems like our bad guys are really, really bad, and that they're just operating on the lowest level. I can't even call it humanity. It's like the lowest level of earthly matter. You know, so there's got to be a flip side of that. There's just got to be some positivity out there picturing whatever we want to happen next. If there is sort of some sort of mass, I don't want to say awakening, but at least a realization of how bad a situation we're in.
Well, that's another element that I found is quite interesting as well. Is like you put the blame on other people. Okay, like you didn't wake up. You're stupid. You're still drinking the aspartame. You're still drinking the fluoride. You're still this, that, and the other. Would it have woken us up any more to have somebody come and accuse us of doing stuff? I don't think so. That's a lot of our problem. Is truth is that. It's because we know what we're talking about. We make the mistake of thinking that the people we're talking to have any idea what we're on about. You know, like my mate Will Ryan and I, we came up across these climate cultists wearing polar bear suits and getting people's signatures for the sign-on campaign. Please carbon tax us. Please. It's the only way to save the environment and save the world and exterminate people at the same time. And what I found was he was going up and saying, look, yeah, just the only reason why you're doing this is because you're able to make man the enemy. And the thing is, these environmentalists don't think man's the enemy or anything like that at any intellectual level. Their practice instills that they are, in fact, anti-humanity. But whether they have any idea what they're doing, I don't think that's anything for us to say. That's nothing for us to accuse. That's something for us to inquire. Like, what do you think about humanity, bro? Do you reckon humans are a disease? You know, that's a different way of putting it. That allows that person some participation without being accused of something that they know nothing about. And you wind up having actual conversations with people. And the frustration that people get in the truth movement, I feel, is that we expect other people to pick up where we leave off. You know, you expect other people to have the same passion about it that we do, instead of just accepting the fact that it's not their time. I mean, even in that Matrix movie, for example, they talked about we never release a mind, we never free a mind once it's reached a certain age. The mind has trouble letting go. And it's just, you don't know how people are going to react. So I say experiment and walk away if it doesn't work out real well and real quickly. Somebody starts getting angry. Somebody starts, you know, getting offside, and you're just like, okay, man, cheers, see you later. And then you go on to the next person. You know, that's what I learned from sales. You don't spend your time trying to sell your product to the person who won't be convinced. You leave them, so thank them for their time, and then you go off to somebody you can help.
You are exactly correct. Oh, wise one. I'm in complete agreement, and I am past that, trying to, you know, slap someone upside the head with a brick. It just doesn't work. And I think the powers of reasoning have been greatly reduced over the last 10 to 15 years. I see that in my friends. I can't get my friends to drink filtered water. I can't convince them that, you know, holding that cell phone up against their head might not be a good thing. Or, you know, do not let your six-year-old drink the Diet Coke. It's like you said. I also have come around to the fact that maybe there's a handful out there that are just supposed to be the yippers and the shouters and the brick throwers, and that we just keep doing it until, you know, if we reach one person or 10 people, that may be enough to knock over a domino. I don't know that, but I am like you. I don't try so hard with those that just have the blinders on. And I'm with you. I just get so frustrated. It's like, what part of that little hole in the Pentagon is a plane? You know, where did the buildings go? It just goes on and on. You know, so I just think,
well, here's the reason why, and I'll just capsule this up. The reason why they get frustrated is because what you're looking at is insanity, and if you try to understand insanity, you go insane from it. That's why it drives you nuts, looking at this stuff and wondering people won't get it, because they're nuts. You shouldn't try and understand it. Get over it. We'll be right back.
Uh-oh. Speed plain rappers, but I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you read me? Am I legible? It's time to get down to the question of eventually will the corruption in the government lead to the collapse of us? Lead to the collapse of us. Lead to the collapse of us. Lead to the collapse of us. From side to side. Right and left are symmetrical on the puppet master's tentacles. The two sides are identical. The troops are not ejectable. They're forming a prodigy and making the Jordan come out of me. It's like recording Nostradamus, taking a tour in the prophecy. The real American gangsters make the poor live in poverty with the corporate dictatorship in a foreign economy. Give to the orphans on TV because a good portion of a lot of these starving children died in the name of a corporate monopoly.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about blowing the faces off of children and then getting fundraisers thrown for you by anti-war activists. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And I think my guest, Art Olivier, has come back. Art, are you there? Art, we can't hear you, mate.
Oh, no.
Oh, there you go. I gotcha.
Okay.
Whew. Okay. Well, final segment, mate. Two questions. Number one was that one I was wanting to ask you earlier about a bit of self-censorship. And so if there's anything that's of your personal opinion that you can't prove that you kind of would like to express or anything like that, but just normally don't, I'd like that. And also, what would you say to people on your deathbed? To the people who are, what would you say about yourself and your own life, and what would your message be to future generations?
Well, you know, live life to the fullest, live in the present. You know, there's an old Chinese saying that people that that are depressed live in the past, people that are anxious live in the future, and people that are at peace live in the present. So, yeah, to live in the present, live life to the fullest. You know, do everything that you can, and don't accept being a slave to anyone.
Mm-hmm. And what about personal opinions that you don't really have an awful lot of evidence for, or something like that about life?
I don't know. Most things that I talk about, there's plenty of evidence out there. So. I really, when I don't have evidence, I research it and I actually come to a conclusion. If there is no evidence, I don't believe it. And if there is, then I I can prove it, then I talk about it. So I really don't have anything that I can't prove, that I'm talking about.
Well, that's fair enough then. Well, in that case, the whole concept of changing the world, I think, is a simple thing. Despite the complications of the problems, the solutions to the most complicated problems are always pretty simple. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
So what do you think is one of the most construed problems that people think is intensely complicated, but the solution's real simple in your eyes?
Well, I don't know. The most important things are, to me, they're very simple. Like when we were talking about monetary policy, for most people, that's complex because it's completely different than what we've been taught all of our lives, and so. Sometimes it's easier to teach people that have no concept of monetary policy, of what a real functional monetary policy could be, than ones that do. I mean, if you've gone through the training and you've gone through the economics courses and you believe in the Keynesian theories of economics, those people are very difficult to discuss a sustainable currency with, because you know they've been basically brainwashed into believing the status quo. So I don't know. It's different people can comprehend different things, and I think one of the most important things for people that are trying to tell others what the truth is that not to be a lapel grabber, you know, to think that you can grab people by the lapel and shake the sense into them. You simply can't. Sometimes some people that are suffering from cognitive dissonance, the more truth that you give them, the more that they'll come back with you with what they've been brainwashed with. And that should not be our goal, is to try to convert every single person into believing what reality really is. It should be to try to reach as many people with what reality is. And you know, when you come up with somebody that is suffering from cognitive dissonance, you know, you move on to somebody else. Don't try to shake the truth into anybody, because it's just simply not possible. You just have to give them tidbits here and there of what's happening, and some people will get it and others won't.
Isn't that interesting? You can shake lies into people, but you can't shake truth into them.
Well, I don't know if they've been shaken into the lies. You know, it's just what they've grown up with, and you know, and the TV has become the reality for far too many people. But I do see a change, though. People in my generation, they were brought up with the nightly news, and they're pretty well, quite a few of them just really believe that's the reality. Where younger people, they don't watch that anymore. They don't sit down and watch Dan Rather every night to see what's going on in the world. They get their information from their friends. They go onto Facebook. You know, they do Twitter accounts or get emails from their friends, and they're not so subject to this kind of mind control that the older generations were. So that really does give me hope for the future, just because it's getting harder and harder for the establishment to control every form of media.
Well, I've found that it's kind of like the simple solutions aspect, just going back to that. It's basically you just look at whatever the problem is and do the exact opposite. If the problem is lies, tell the truth. If the problem is fraud, engage in business honestly. If the problem is corruption, be cleaner than clean.
Yeah, no, that's definitely what you have to do to counter it. You're not going to be successful every time that you do that, but no, that's good rules to work by.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's about doing the right thing. You know, don't question what's the correct thing to do. But question what's the right thing to do. And have you noticed now that people are so sure of themselves that they don't question their own actions anymore? Self-reflection has kind of been forced into the background. And I fear that as an aspect of my life, for example. Imagine if I stopped questioning myself. Imagine if I thought I could justify saying anything to anybody for any reason, and what kind of a monster I'd become. So not only do you need to keep the corrupt ones in check, but also yourself.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I have seen that in politics, where honest people get elected, and once they get part of the system, you know, they can easily be corrupted, and that happens. That happens quite often. I mean, that's one of the first things they do when you do get elected, is they try to bring you into the dark side immediately.
Yeah. I think it might have been Mark Twain that said, when an honest man discovers he is wrong, he will either cease to be wrong or cease to be honest.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm. I've been to countless council meetings. That's a good word coupling there. where you'd have the two or three councillors or something like that saying we should receive the views of the public with an open mind, and we need to make sure that this council is accessible, that we do the will of the people. And they get shouted down by the other dozen or so other corrupt, fat, generally white, male, corporate contractor, company owning council sitting members with clear conflicts of interest just go, no, we don't need to listen to the views of the people. We don't need to listen to you. Democracy is bad. Competition is a sin. In the Rockefeller sense of the word. And you wonder, man, no, that's why nobody goes to council meetings, because you don't get anything good accomplished. And people naturally stray away from doing bad things for themselves.
When I was still in the minority position on the city council, if somebody would come to the council meetings and complain about a certain thing, the very next day, they would get somebody out to their homes. And I even overheard one of the mayor saying this one time when I was still on the city council. He says, make sure we get code enforcement out of Jim Craig's house tomorrow. Because he had come over there and he had complained about some of the actions of the council members. So if you complained about him, and I had several documented accounts of this, you would either get a code enforcement officer, a police officer, or some kind of public safety officer. They would be at your house the very next day looking for some kind of violation. I even had this one lady that she ended up on the end of her driveway. They put up a sign that said right turn only, because she was right on the outside of the city limits. And when she left her driveway, she was no longer able to turn left into the city of Bellflower. She would have to turn right and immediately go into the city of Norwalk, go down the road for about a mile or two, and then make a U-turn and then come back into Bellflower. So,
oh my God. All right, I'm sorry, Arthur, we've come to the end of the program today. Thank you so much for all that you do and for coming on the show today. And thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.